Exactly 1 year after he pulled the U.S. out of a landmark nuclear deal with Iran, President Donald Trump on Wednesday slapped Iran with a new round of sanctions as tensions flared over what U.S. officials said were credible Iranian threats against U.S. forces. The new sanctions target revenue from Iran's metal exports such as iron and steel and follow earlier U.S. moves to cut the nation's crucial oil profits.
There's some relief Wednesday on factory floors. On word, GM is in separate discussions to keep a General Motors manufacturing plant in Canada and another in Lordstown, Ohio, from shutting down. Trump, who is happy to announce on Twitter the Lordstown plant will be sold to an obscure company called Workhorse Group to build electric trucks, calling it, quote, great news for Ohio.
Turn off your Uber and Lyft apps and strike against companies exploiting drivers. That was the message in several cities around the world Wednesday, where protests were held ahead of Uber's stock market listing this week. But turnout was weak in New York, London, and in Uber's hometown. There are 3 million Uber drivers around the world, and many of them drive part-time.
WGN Radio's Daily Conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Thursday. It's May the 9th, and it's 5:11 in the morning. Thank you for tuning in again for another edition of The Opening Bell. Another business day is getting underway, and there is lots going on in the world of business with numbers on the markets in the negative, in the red again this morning in the U.S. as trade tensions continue in the United States. Lots happening around the world as well. We'll get to some of the headlines momentarily on the program today. It's Thought Leader Thursday, and we have a new thought leader for you today. Ed Curry is in today to talk about mortgages and home loans from Associated Bank. Ed is in the PPG Paints Green Room, and we'll bring him in momentarily this morning for our first conversation today. A little bit later on this morning, Jim Nirt over at Purdue is going to join us. The latest agricultural economic barometer is out, and it's taking a dip. Jim will be here at about 5:38 this morning to walk us through the numbers and talk a little bit about farmer sentiment as we head into spring planting season. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward another morning of opening losses on Wall Street. Dow futures are down 202 points, nearly 0.75%. S&P futures are down nearly 0.75%. NASDAQ futures are off nearly 0.75%, pushing nearly 2% now this morning. Again, as U.S.-China trade tensions continue to be on the minds of investors. Around the globe this morning, markets in the red in Asia as well. In Japan, off by nearly 1%, down 200 points on the Nikkei. The Hang Seng down nearly 2 1/3, nearly 692 points this morning. The Shanghai off nearly 1.5%. And in Europe, the numbers are red as well, with the London market down nearly 0.5%. The DAX in Germany off nearly 100 points, nearly 0.75%. In France, the market's off nearly 70%, 70 points, nearly 1.25% this morning. And futures on the oil market, U.S. crude oil, $61.88 a barrel, down about 24 cents. A couple of stories as we begin this morning. Of course, China and the U.S., the trade situation is one of the biggest stories of the morning, will continue to be, as the trade talks in the U.S. are set to get underway and more tariffs are set to be put into place tomorrow. Yesterday, China was accused of breaking the deal that had been put on the table. President Trump telling a rally in Panama City last night in Florida that it is still planning, that he is still planning to raise tariffs against Chinese goods this week unless they come to a deal by Friday. But China this morning saying it will not be pressured by the United States to come to any deal. Trump earlier this week said he would raise tariffs on $200 billion worth of Chinese imports from 10% to 25% and levy tariffs on a number of other products as well. U.S. lawmakers are working to make sure small business owners are protected from harmful business regulations. Iowa Senator Joni Ernst introducing a bipartisan bill with Democratic Senator Kyrsten Sinema calling it the Prove It Act, intended to give small businesses a stronger voice in Washington, D.C. The bill, according to Ernst, will give small businesses an opportunity to make government agencies prove their proposals won't hurt them. Let's begin front and center this morning with our thought leader conversation, Thought Leader Thursday here today. Ed Curry is here, a certified mortgage planner, construction loan specialist at Associated Bank. Ed, good morning. Welcome to the opening bell.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
And welcome to our Thought Leaders chair. I want to start this morning by letting people kind of get to know you a little bit. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
I'm a residential mortgage lender. I've been at Associated Bank for a little over 10 years, been in the business over 25. In fact, I started, things were much different, 1994. OJ was riding around in Broncos, and no-doc loans were considered safe loans. So, since then, I've started in the broker world in around 2008 when financial crisis hit. I wanted to partner up with a direct lender, and that's where I've been ever since with Associated.
Give us a sense of what you do every day.
It's really chatting with clients and speaking with them on things that they want to do with their home, whether it's purchase, refinance, construction, rehab, maybe a brand new build. Mm-hmm. So most of my day, hopefully most of my day, is chatting with clients and working on solutions for them. However, as it tends to happen, you tend to get involved with the process and managing the process and making sure ultimately the client has a kind of a as easy as process as possible.
Well, we call you a thought leader, but it sounds like you're an expert in this field as well.
Most days, I think.
Yeah. What taking a sort of a big picture of this industry right now, what would you, if you had to give it a state of the industry report, what would you say about it?
In terms of the mortgage industry,
yeah.
You know, it's we're at an interesting place. I always think about the average age of a loan officer. You know, the average age of a loan officer, I've heard various stats, is in the mid-50s, if you can believe that. So we're really looking for a lot more younger people to get in the business. There's a lot of older guys that just been around. And when you talk about, you know, technology moving forward, I think it'll be really helpful for some younger people to get involved. But overall, I think you know, the industry's solid. CFPB made some splashes initially with some of the compliance and regulatory changes. As with most things, the industry has gotten used to those changes, mm-hmm. adapted. So for the most part, it's a real good opportunity for clients to jump in and get a good mortgage at a good rate and not be as hassled.
You mentioned the 2008 crisis. Do you think that this industry is safer today than it was in 2008?
They tell us it is.
Yeah.
I would think so. I think, you know, the biggest issue that we had previously was banks taking or brokers taking a lot of risks that they weren't responsible for. There's a lot more regulatory requirements involved for banks. For example, I look at Associated Bank, which we're a portfolio lender, and you know, it's our money, it's sitting on our balance sheet, it's our risk. But at the same point, our regulators are going to really dictate what kind of risk that we can take. So so there's a lot more oversight. And, yeah, ultimately, I think the industry is a lot more sound.
When you have conversations with clients, are they still nervous about becoming a home buyer for the first time? What kinds of fears and challenges do they face and do you talk to them about?
I don't think so. I think it's second nature to people now. I think about back in 1994 when I started, I remember some of the first loan applications I took. People, of course, back then, everybody, all loans were face-to-face. You know, now I may meet one out of 400 people that I'm working with. But it was all face to face. People would come in, they would dress up, they'd be nervous, they'd be shaking, they'd hand all of their documents, they'd be nervous if they're going to get a loan. And now, you know, start off with a phone call, and maybe at the end of a 20-minute phone call, people are sending over every personal financial piece of information in their life to get a loan. So, No, I don't think people are as nervous anymore. I think there's a lot more information for people to feel comfortable with the process.
We're going to talk a little bit more about the technology, some new technology, a little bit later in our conversation, but I'd like to talk to you a little bit about some news in this space. Weekly mortgage applications up nearly 3% over the last week. Refinances, home buyers, it's still a strong market, isn't it?
It really is. Seasonally, it's a strong time. and people really are feeling comfortable with state of the economy, interest rates. Interest rates are always one thing that are bantied about on whether it's going to impact home buying or not. I really think it boils down to two things, personal employment, personal assets. If people feel good about their job, they feel they're going to get a raise next year, if they wanted to switch jobs, they can find any job they wanted to. If they had their 401k is nice and fat, they're going to feel a lot more confident to be buying a house, making a step up for that next bigger home. So interest rates will cycle up and down over the years. People realize they can always refinance at a lower rate, but it's really boils down to the employment and assets that they have.
Give us a sense of where mortgage rates are right now.
Yeah, for the most part, a 30-year fixed as an average is around 4 to 4.25%, depending on a number of different factors. So that's down from its peak in November of last year. So it's come down quite a bit, which is nice. There's always a perception they're going to come down a little bit more. But I think for the most part, we're probably right in the middle of the range where we'll probably be for the remainder of the year. You could have some spike. You could have some drops on different things. The reason rates may increase, for example, may be things like inflation moving a little bit higher. Inflation has been falling as of late.
Yeah.
The Federal Reserve's favored inflation gauge is the PCE, or personal consumption expenditure. That peaked last July around 2.4%. It's down about 1.5% right now. So if there were any sort of significant increases in inflation expectations, that could certainly increase rates. GDP and strength of the economy. A lot of economists thought that the tax changes were going to positively impact GDP, and they think this year and next year that's going to fade a little bit. So any upward surprises would certainly cause rates to increase a little bit. And also one thing that a lot of people don't talk about is debt issuance. The United States needs to pay for stuff. So
yeah.
They issue debt to pay for that
the
stuff.
Bonds and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And the more bonds you have out there, the higher yields that investors will look to be compensated to buy that paper. So that's some of the things that can impact higher rates. And then to the downside, if inflation were to keep falling, this week we're seeing a little bit of stock sell-off.
Mm-hmm.
There's at the end of the day, for every dollar that's invested, it's going to go generally into stock, bonds, or cash. And when stocks sell off, if it comes out of stocks, it's generally going to go to cash or bonds. And in a lot of cases, when you do see stock sell-offs, you tend to see mortgage rates fall a little bit.
I bet you're happy that the Federal Reserve has decided to go back onto the sidelines.
You know, it certainly takes a lot of tension out. And, there's a lot of headline risk in that as well. In November, the headlines were Federal Reserve is going to continue to raise rates. Forecasts, Fannie Mae, I believe, even had a forecast this year for 5.5% 30-year fixed. So that gets a lot of consumers really concerned about, jumping in.
Mm-hmm.
So when the Fed appears to be on hold, back to equilibrium, I think people then start to look at more the real reasons and the personal reasons for them to jump into buying a home.
Well, that is a good transition to the next part of our conversation, which is what home buyers and refinancers should know about not only mortgage rates, but if they're planning, if they're thinking like later this year they want to buy a house, what should they be doing right now to prepare for that?
One thing I always recommend is get your credit in check. And one thing in particular that they can do is the utilization rate on their credit cards. A lot of consumers these days will utilize credit cards for daily purchases, for points, for whatever. And one of the biggest impacts, the negative impacts to credit and credit scores, is the utilization rate. The higher the utilization rate on a credit card, the bigger the negative is on your credit score. So,
yeah.
For example, if you have a credit card with a balance of $5,000 and you're charging it to $4,500 each month, even if you're paying it off, that credit card is 90% utilized. And that could negatively impact your credit score 25 to 75 points. So, what I and it's all based on percentages. You could have one of those $100 retail cards. And if you have a $90 balance, it's 90% utilized. So what I always tell clients as you're getting closer before you're having somebody pull your credit is, especially with the internet, you can online, you can pay these credit cards off or down on a weekly basis. Go in every week so you can still use it. Go in every week and pay it off or pay it down. So that way, once a mortgage lender does pull your credit, because you never know what that last balance they're reporting is going to be and when they're going to report it, pay that down each week. So that way, when it does pull, it'll be pulled at a low utilization rate, and you'll be able to maximize your credit that way.
So all of this time, when I've been paying off my credit card every month with monthly purchases from the grocery store and all that stuff, I'm doing the wrong thing?
You're doing a good thing, okay. But what's happening is that back to, let's say it's $4,500 each month you're paying off, the credit bureau is, when they pull your credit, that's going to show $4,500 balance. Now, you're going to say to me, Ed, I pay that off every month. Right. But they're going to always report the most recent balance. Well, if you're paying that off every week, that might be a $1,000 balance that'll be showing at that point, and that'll be a boost to your credit score.
And so, again, what should I do then? Just pay some of it off?
Well, if you're able to pay it off each week, pay it off each week.
Okay.
But if you're not able to pay it off each week, certainly pay off as much as you can on a weekly basis.
Weekly as opposed to monthly.
Correct.
Okay.
At least leading up until that credit pull for the mortgage.
Are there other things we can do besides doing stuff with credit cards to improve our credit rating? I mean, do paying our bills on time, does all of that stuff kind of count for our credit rating?
All that stuff matters, certainly. Yeah. The two things are the credit utilization and on-time payments. So if you have, we have the ability as consumers to get a free credit report at annualcreditreport.com. You don't get a credit score. In fact, side note, never buy a consumer credit score. That credit score is going to be different than the mortgage score that your mortgage guy pulls or gal. So don't spend your money on that. What you really want to do with annualcreditreport.com, it's a free credit report that we as consumers are able to get from all three credit bureaus. Just look at your credit. Make sure there's no collections on there that you're not aware of. You know, sometimes there'll be those medical collections for $50 that you could have sworn that the insurance company was going to pay for. All those things will impact your credit. So look at your credit, make sure there's nothing on there you're not aware of, and make sure anything has been paid off that needs to be paid off.
You probably see this a lot. People thinking they're going to predict where mortgage rates are at. And so they think, okay, I'm going to sit on the sidelines a little bit longer and wait for that rate to go lower. If you see something that's attractive, you should pounce now, shouldn't you?
Absolutely. Predicting mortgage rates is like predicting who's going to sit on the Iron Throne, I think, at the end of Game of Thrones, right? No one knows. Your hope is not Cersei. But ultimately, you could go back to forecasts. And in fact, I make note of one so I can look back and see how wrong they are. And of course, nobody ever calling people out for being wrong. So yeah, you're absolutely right. It's about, you know, what makes sense for you, rate makes sense for you as a refinance. Refinance is the decision to refinance is savings, cost, and time. Those are the three factors you want to consider. How much are you going to save on a monthly basis? What is it going to cost you? And how much time will you be in that loan? For somebody who's going to be moving in the next couple of years, you certainly could structure a refinance with no closing costs, so maybe it makes sense there. But you really want to see how long it's going to take you to recoup those closing costs. So if you're going to save $200 a month and it's going to cost you $2,000 for the refinance, it's going to take you 10 months to break even on that that cost. And if you're going to be in there for the next 10 years, that makes a ton of sense. But if you think you might be selling in the next couple of years, it just doesn't make sense.
I want to talk a little bit about technology before we run out of time. By the way, congratulations on the first ever Game of Thrones reference on the opening bell. we appreciate that. But I saw this story about the process of going through closing. I think everybody who's been through this knows it's just you have to go to the office. There's signature after signature and page after page. Is it possible that this could possibly be done at home online?
Absolutely. In fact, there was one particular bank before the downturn in 2008 that started this, and then it all kind of fell apart. But ultimately, the digital closings remote notarization law has really been the catalyst for this. So Anybody has gone to a purchase closing, gone to a title company, you get there, you need your identification for the notary to notarize the documents. Uh-huh. So they can firmly say that, yes, Steve is the person that sat down here, signed these documents. This is him, and he signed this note, this mortgage, the important stuff. Uh-huh. So the idea of a notary not being able to do that in person, have to do it through webcam or whatever they're going to do, that law has been the catalyst. And I think there's 10 or 11 states at this point. Illinois has approved that law, I mm-hmm. believe. So it will happen ultimately. Technology needs to be convenient. You know, right now on a refinance, we'll schedule clients' closings at their home whenever they want to close. Somebody nice. Comes, and if they want to be done in 10 or 15 minutes, they can be done in 10 or 15 minutes. So the technology needs to be convenient as well. Will somebody be able to log on to the system? How long will it take? Will it be confusing? Who's going to go over the documents with them? So on a refinance, I think for national lenders, mm-hmm. it may make sense. It may cut some of the cost out of the process. They won't have to send that mobile closer and pay that mobile closer to do the closing. For clients who are willing and able to kind of go through that online process, digitally signature, they're fine with that. The biggest risk and probably the biggest impediments to it is going to be, will lenders allow it? Because ultimately, if the lender is giving you $500,000 for a mortgage, they want to make sure they get that money back.
Yeah, and make sure that you are the person that they're giving it to, right?
Exactly, yeah. Correct. So the only way for them to do that is make sure that the person that signed that note, that promised to pay that $500,000 back, is in fact the person that they believe it is. And of course, they've got that mortgage, which is the lien that's tied to the property, that will be ultimately that ensures that they have that protection. So that'll be the challenges for lenders to figure out is will their money be safe to be able to get repaid?
Ed, great conversation. How can people get a hold of you and have it one-on-one if they want?
You can reach me by phone at 847-214-2404 or by email at ed.curry@associatedbank.com, and that's C-U-R-R-I-E.
It's great meeting you. Thank you for being in our Thought Leader Chair.
Thanks for having me.
Ed Curry, Certified Mortgage Planner, Construction Loan Specialist at Associated Bank. It's our Thought Leader conversation. Remember, you can listen to past conversations at WGNRadio.com on the opening bell page. Follow Associated Bank at Associated Biz on Twitter and head over to AssociatedBank.com/thought leadership to meet more of our thought leaders and hear more conversations there as well.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Thursday edition of The Opening Bell. Our focus shifts now to the business of agriculture. The Purdue CME Group Ag Economy Barometer in April dropped sharply, and it also shows ag producers appear to be losing some confidence in whether the trade dispute with China will be resolved in a way that benefits them. Joining us this morning is Jim Mintert, a professor and extension economist at the Department of Agricultural Economics at Purdue University. Jim, good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Steve. Good to be here.
So let's talk about the latest ag barometer. Some numbers here that should be kind of concerning to the ag community. Tell us about the headline.
Well, the Ag Economy Barometer is a monthly survey of 400 farmers nationwide, and so we use their responses to compute the sentiment index. And as you pointed out, the sentiment index dropped sharply in April. A month earlier, the reading was 133. It dropped to 115 in April. That's the lowest we've been since the depths of the decline in commodity prices that took place last summer. And actually, if you go back to when we started collecting data in the fall of 15, this is about as low as we've been since just before the election in the fall of 16. So it's a significant drop, and producers are concerned both about current conditions and about future. We break the index down into a future expectations index and a current condition index. Both of them drop pretty sharply. So it's both what's taking place right now, and people are also concerned about what's going to take place down the road.
I mentioned the trade issue, but I'm guessing there are probably quite a few factors that go into that sentiment, the feeling, in things impacting agriculture. What would some of those be?
Well, the trade issue is big because it's had a big impact on commodity prices, especially, you know, if you look at the decline that's took place in our index since the first of the year. A good chunk of that's related to the sharp declines we've seen both in corn prices and especially soybean prices. Soybean prices have fallen pretty dramatically since the first of the year, and actually if you go back 12 months, we're way lower than we were this time last year. So those have been big factors, and some of that's trade. Obviously, the loss of access to the Chinese market has been tremendous, had a tremendous impact on the ag sector. But overall, it's a reflection of weak economic conditions in agriculture, especially in the crop sector. We've seen a bit of a rebound on the pork side. Recently, of course, live cattle futures have declined pretty sharply, but so a little bit of a mixed situation there. But on the crop side, it's a much weaker situation than what we had previously.
Prices are a big issue, and actual farm land prices as well. And we've seen the number of foreclosures and defaults rise in recent years. That's still weighing heavily on the minds of a lot of farmers and ag producers, isn't it?
Well, it's weighing on people's minds. I think maybe a little better measure, though, of stress is to think about when you get to the bankruptcy stage, you know, it's really past tense. If you think about it looking ahead a little bit, it's more about people that are under financial stress, and a lot of that's about liquidity, the inability to maintain working capital in particular. In our surveys, we asked these questions a couple of different times since the first of the year. We asked people how many are they carrying over unpaid operating debt from prior years, and that's a pretty good indication that they're under some significant financial stress. And in our surveys, it looks like about 5 to maybe 7% of U.S. producers are suffering financial stress in the form of having to carry over that unpaid operating debt. So that's significant, and that's consistent with some of the other surveys, like from the Federal Reserve Bank. So there's a group of people out there that are severely stressed. The group that's probably under the most stress here in the Midwest recently has been dairy producers, and that's why you've seen the increase in exits from farming of particularly in the upper Midwest, Wisconsin, Minnesota. That's also the part of the country where you've seen the biggest increase in bankruptcies, and I think a good bit of that is associated with the stress in the dairy sector. On the crop side, we really haven't seen that take place. However, the declines we're looking at in commodity prices right now are going to exacerbate the stress. I mean, the decline in soybeans in particular, if soybean prices stay where they're at now or even dip a little bit below that, which seems possible, that could create some very significant stress here going into the fall and then the winter of 1920.
One of the other questions that the Ag Barometer asks is talking about future investments, large future investments in the farmers' farming operations. The numbers on that, too, are a little bit concerning, aren't they?
Well, they are, and if you look at it, we compute an index. We ask people whether or not now is a good time or a bad time to make large investments in their farming operation, and we use that to compute the index. And the index dropped to a reading of 48 this month from a reading of 57 a month earlier. But maybe more importantly, if you look at the life of the survey, again, going back to the fall of 15, there's only been 5 times when that index has fallen below 50. And so that tells you that people are really pulling back. They're trying to make some management decisions that help them survive a stressful time. They're pulling back on investments, reducing their capital expenditures. And all of that is an effort to preserve their working capital and try and manage their way through the stress. But that's another indication of the fact that it's relatively tough times out there for most ag producers.
The question, too, that you've asked is, do you think it is likely or unlikely that the soybean trade dispute with China will be settled by July 1st? The number responding in the negative on that is a little surprising to me.
Well, it's surprising, and it's especially surprising how much it changed in 1 month. So we asked that question 2 months in a row, and in March, 55%, just a little over half, of the respondents said that they thought it was unlikely we would settle it by July 1. That jumped to 72% in the April survey. And I think, again, that's an indication that things really deteriorated here over the last 30 days or 45 days, depending on how you look at it. We collected our data in March, in the middle of March. The April data was the middle of April. So people have become less optimistic about what's going to take place in the short run. And that July 1 date is kind of significant because we need to resolve the trade dispute with just China relatively quickly to regain the opportunity to sell soybeans to China here in the fall. And if you look at it historically, China's a major buyer of soybeans from the U.S., and the bulk of those sales take place in the fall quarter and in a little early part of the winter, when the South American producers are essentially out of the market. So if we lose that opportunity to sell those soybeans to China, it suggests another tough year ahead of us. So there's a lot of negativity out there. And, of course, the trade negotiations taking place this week are immensely important to U.S. agriculture.
Yeah, and we may know what direction those are heading as soon as Friday. I know one of the other interesting questions is whether or not the United States should rejoin the TPP. That's the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Nearly half of producers think that we should.
Yeah, that was a little bit surprising. We've never asked that question before, and it indicates, I think, U.S. agriculture producers are very aware of the fact that trade is extremely important to U.S. agriculture. If you think about the growth opportunities for U.S. agriculture, it's really about moving product to other parts of the world where the bulk of the world's consumers really are located. That's true for the meats, and that's true for the crop side as well, and especially on the soybean side. But if you look at it from a broader perspective, if you think about future growth for the beef industry, future growth for the pork and poultry industries, it's really about our ability to export. And I think U.S. agriculture producers realize that, and the TPP would potentially open up markets in especially the Pacific Rim to U.S. agriculture, where population is growing rapidly and incomes are growing rapidly, and consumers are wanting to improve their diets, and that would be very positive for U.S. agriculture, and I think people recognize that.
Well, Jim, we appreciate you being on with us this morning and giving us a little bit of analysis of the latest Ag Economy Barometer. Thank you.
Thanks for the opportunity. Appreciate it.
Jim Minnetert from Purdue. He's a professor and extension economist in the Department of Agricultural Economics at Purdue University. The Purdue CME Group Ag Economy Barometer is out, and you can find more online at ag.purdue.edu.
You're listening to the Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN, Associated Bank Market Desk, futures off on the Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ heading to the Opening Bell. Nearly 177 points on the Dow, nearly 20 points on the S&P, and nearly 62 points on the NASDAQ, all of them off more than 0.5%. Nearly 0.75% on the NASDAQ. Now, agriculture and commodities. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. After rains moved through the corn-soybean belt yesterday afternoon and overnight, the market yesterday before it closed was impacted by weather and maybe the possibility that we have drier weather coming. But we still have a lot of catch-up to do. I noted a report showing comparison of acres left to plant this year compared to last year on this date. In Illinois, we still have 10,080,000 acres to plant. A year ago at this time, we had only 2,860,000 acres to plant. Gives you an idea of the catch-up that we have to do. And the meeting today gets underway in Washington between trade negotiators with China and the United States. Who knows what will happen there? Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Thursday, May 9th. A full plate of economic reports today. Balance of trade figures for March lead off the day. Analysts expect to see the deficit widen slightly to $50.2 billion. Also today, April producer prices. The experts are forecasting a 0.2% increase. Import and export prices for March are due as well. Analysts predicting $209.7 billion in imports and $259.1 billion in exports.
Weekly jobless numbers are out, too. The forecast is a decline of 10,000 to 220,000 Americans filing for initial claims for benefits. Fed Chair Jerome Powell delivers his speech this morning, and wholesale inventories for March also coming today. Experts say the smart money is no change in those figures. On the earnings calendar, Norwegian Cruise Line, Overstock, and Party City plan to release earnings before the opening bell. Dropbox, Equifax, GoPro, News Corporation, TiVo, Yelp, and Zillow release earnings after the close. Just some of the things that could move the markets on this Thursday, May the 9th.